Welcome in to the Devi Devotional Podcast, a show devoted to all things Devi and C2C. Hosted by John Arrington and Aaron Wilcox, this dynamic duo brings you actionable strategies with player-driven analysis for your Devi and C2C leagues. Let's dive in.
Let's dive in, and I didn't put the overlay back on. That was definitely on me. Let's dive into the Devi wide receivers. Welcome to the Devi Devotional, where we stay devoted to Devi. I'm your host, Dynasty Coach A, normally joined by Aaron Wilcox at AaronWilcox86. But tonight, I have a very special guest as Aaron is overseas drinking all of the European beers. And that is at FF_DirtyMike on Twitter, Mike Valerie from the Back to Devi podcast, the best Devi podcast at campusdecanton.com. And I'm a big fan. That's all I have to say. But I really appreciate you coming on. How are you doing, Mike?
Kelly, make me blush. I mean... I'm glad other people are recognizing that we're the best Devi show on the feed. Devi debate can't hold a candle to us. That's all I'm saying.
It's so true. It's so true. And I mean, honestly, are they even a Devi pod is the real question.
They're not. I gave them a list of like 20 names to change their name from. Like the college tiff, the football argument. You know, like there's no Devi. It's just a myth.
No Devi. College football argument. Scenario or something like that. All right, so like I said, Mike loves talking about Devi wide receivers. Last time on the pod, Aaron and I were talking about the Devi running back situation, which is not all that spectacular, but I think that the wide receivers, honestly, I was looking through it earlier today, and I don't know that the wide receivers are all that much better. Maybe Mike's gonna disagree with me here, but I feel like it's kind of rough right now. How do you feel about that?
No, I would agree. The issue is that they're all big men. Like the NFL is moving towards like these twitchy kind of like slot guys. You know, you want the route runners, and you look at this class, and you're like, well, there's maybe like one or two real route runners, and like maybe like five or so you can like throw in that group, but you're not feeling super great about like on the high end level at least. So it's definitely lacking in the separators category.
Yeah, and that's got me a little concerned, and I feel like we're, you know, especially as we dive into like maybe some tiers and stuff here a little bit later, that we might start disagreeing pretty quickly, because I feel like people are trying to force players into tiers, maybe because of a big game or two or something like that. And that's just not the way that I do it. You know, I need to see full profiles. You know, it's not just year one. It's not just year two. It's not just year three. It's all of the years, you know, and I'm looking at everything. Did you not break out until year four, year five, whatever? And, you know, if you did, that's fine. I just need to see something. Like, I need to see a big season for me to really, like, fall in love with that kind of player. So yeah. There's just so much, like you said, there's so many different levels and types of players and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be fun to dive into. But before we do that, and before we get too crazy with the wide receivers, I was listening to the Back to Devi pod today. Like I said, I'm a big fan. But you said something a little wild today, and I need to make sure that you were... Obviously, it had to have been completely out of context. I must have heard you wrong, because I heard you say that you had J.J. McCarthy as your QB15 in Devi, or something around there. And so I obviously heard something wrong. You meant to say QB5 overall or something like that, but you accidentally said QB15, right?
That's kind of correct. He's actually QB16.
Oh my God.
A little bit lower.
So what's going on? Like, I mean, I get that not everyone was in on the JJ McCarthy last year, when I was shouting from the rooftops that he was the QB3 in the class. People were like, no, I'm not there yet. Now it seems like most people have kind of gotten on board, like, okay, he's the QB3 in the class. You know, like, maybe they don't absolutely love him, maybe they have him two tier breaks, you know, down from Caleb and Drake May there, but I feel like everyone's pretty much on board for the most part, except for you.
I will say this. I do have him ranked at his floor, in my opinion. So here's the issue. I think, like, he's a fine player. He has a really good... I think he has a good arm. He has a good arm, and that's, like, a prerequisite. I don't think he's played one this year. He really hasn't had to put the team on his back, which is not a negative against him. I just don't think he's really shown much improvement. I have a disdain for Michigan just killing skill offensive players because they just don't develop anyone. So I'm a little bit worried about him getting the development he needs in that system, especially going, well, we're now into year two. And I'm not seeing the natural step forward. But I have a lot of guys ranked in front of him that are more mystery boxes, and that's like the whole thing. So he could be QB three. I only think there's two first round QBs in this draft, and I think that's a solidified opinion for me. So like I have, it's a lot. I have eight freshmen in front of him. And are those eight freshmen going to be better than him? Wow. Like, no, they're not. I just think their mystery boxes are more worth the risk than drafting JJ McCarthy in drafts right now. So like the three in front of him, for example, Lenore Sellers, Aiden Childs, and Jaden Rashada. I never really thought Rashada had that good of an arm. He looked kind of really good his like first two games there. He's hurt right now. I don't know, but like true freshman game playing time. Gotta notice that. I love Kenny Dillingham. Came over from Oregon, has a history of being a QB whisperer. I want to see if he can cook with him, you know? And before that, Aiden Childs has had some spot starts in for DJU and has looked good. And then Sellers, I think, threw the best four passes I've ever seen in my entire life, a true freshman debut for South Carolina. And I think he's actually like an uber athlete, and he will be like the number one dual threat QB in his class. So two of those guys could fail. I definitely think that's like likely, actually. I think it's likely that two of those guys just fail and they'll drop out of my rankings eventually. But it's more of a I'd rather the mystery box. But I don't want to talk bad about McCarthy. I think he's got great tools. I just don't think he's a phenomenal processor. I'm not really sure he's a great improviser. But like the tools are there. Like the tools are there. I think he's a locked in day two guy minimum.
I do agree with you. I think that, you know, so much is made in college football, like kind of trying to put everyone on a level playing field, but it's not a level playing field. Like he hasn't played hardly anyone. And I mean, there's so many examples of that. I feel the same way about Caleb Williams. Like he didn't play anyone until he played Notre Dame, and they looked absolutely terrible against Notre Dame. So, you know, it's so tough, but you know, unfortunately they're not put on a level playing field. You have teams that are playing, you know, like Drake May played what South Carolina in week one, you know, and then you have USC going out and playing like Nevada, you know, in week one or week two or whatever it was. So this is not the same.
Yeah, there's so much context too. Like Drake May, for example, his receiving corps is just a bunch of bag of chips. You know, that's what they are. JJ McCarthy's got a little bit more there. We'll talk probably a little bit later about Roman Wilson, who I think's a bit of an intriguing guy right now. But you know, I think the surrounding pieces on JJ compared to Drake May is very different. And it's very obvious too, watching Drake May, that he's the one elevating that offense. Like you throw like some mid-level quarterback. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head, like Tyler Van Dyke. Like he's not going to do what Drake May does over there.
No, I agree with you. And that's probably enough about the QBs. I just had to get some kind of clarification. I guess I do understand now that you're just putting all of those freshmen there. The problem is, you know, you were like, oh, two of them are probably going to fail. Seven of them are probably going to fail, unfortunately. Yeah. It's just the way that this works. So, I mean, I get what you're doing, but I think when it's all said and done, it's going to be more like even if your rankings stayed exactly the same and then you just move them up against the, you know, the freshmen that fail, he's still more of like QB seven or something like that when it's really all said and done.
It's all said and done. Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, guys in this class I have ahead of him, obviously Caleb and Drake May. And then I still have Quinn. Quinn's in the same boat. I don't think he's a day one guy. Certainly not this year. I believe he's going back. And then Michael.
He doesn't have the arm, man. McCarthy has. I get what you're saying. Like maybe he doesn't have the best processing or whatever. But I'll tell you what, he has a live arm, man.
He does, absolutely. And then Penix, I actually do think he's the QB3 in the class. I'm not like super sold. I still think he's a day two guy, but I think.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I'm not a big Penix fan. But enough. We're not here to talk about QBs. Oh. I just wanted to clarify that a little bit. But we're here to talk about Debbie wide receivers and everything that goes into it. But obviously everyone knows me. I am the big nerd, the analytics guy, the numbers guy, all that kind of stuff. Aaron is definitely more of the film guy, but he does delve into the numbers a little bit. You know, he likes to mix it up. How do you approach scouting wide receivers? Because you said it was one of your favorite things to do as far as, you know, Debbie and you know, like draft profiles and all that kind of stuff is scouting wide receivers. So how do you approach that? And, you know, do you have a certain way of breaking them into tiers, or, you know, is it strictly film? Is it analytics? Do you mix anything in? How does that all work for you?
I do have a personal gray sheet when it comes to draft time, and I do actually have a weighted analytics section. It's probably like 40% of my grade compared to 60% film. I keep it close to the vest because I think if someone like you who actually knows how to do these models will look at it and be like, this looks pretty janky. This looks pretty ghetto. I don't know about this analytics side.
If you saw my stuff, especially when I first started, then you might not think that. Now it's gotten a lot more organized and everything. But when I first started, I thought about that the other day. I'm like, man, if I ever just like died out of nowhere and somebody was like, oh, you know, we got to keep these models going, they would have no idea what to do. Yeah.
Sometimes I do think analytics is stupid because it's like, you know, it's telling me a guy that's good and I'm like, obviously he's good. I can tell you that too. He's 1,000 yards in the SEC. Like, duh. Like, know that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, that boils down to like not every metric is predictive. You know, some are just descriptive. And so like, that's the important thing. That's what I always try to focus on is what's actually predictive and what's just descriptive. And people kind of don't always understand the difference. And that's where I think the disconnect comes, where people are like, oh yeah, you know, these metrics guys don't know what they're talking about. These analytics guys, it's because they see some guy like posting some random chart on Twitter and they honestly have no idea what the chart is, but it makes the player that they like look good. So they're like, see, this matters. And they're like, no, it doesn't matter. It's just that he has 1,000 yards. That's all it means, you know?
Absolutely. But for scouting players, I do like box score scout at first just to like get like a feel for like some deficiencies compared, you know, so I can like look for certain things on film. But besides that though, I like to start off by putting them into like roles. I think that's kind of how the NFL looks at players, putting them into roles. Corey and I did an episode a while ago on that. I think like preseason, called scouting traits, and I'm trying to pull it up. But like for wide receivers, which have a lot more roles than other guys, it's like, you know, you got field stretchers, you have alphas, you have contested catch specialists, possession slash technicians, and then flanker slash gadget skill sets. And like, that's kind of where I try to put them in. And then depending on that role, like I care a little bit more or less about them. Like field stretchers, like those kind of your smaller guys who just run deep, keep the safeties honest. They're like super essential for the NFL. Yeah. But like for fantasy, like maybe they catch a deep ball, maybe they don't. Like, I don't think there's too many field stretchers that are elite. There are a few, like Will Fuller, for example, like that was pretty like special. And then I care a lot if they have like multiple skill sets. So Xavier Worthy, for example, he certainly can be a field stretcher. I think that's his calling card, but he's definitely shown ability to like manipulate as well and be a technician slash possession wide receiver. So when you have multiple skill sets, I think those guys are kind of like locked in like tier one, tier two type guys. When you have multiple skill sets for a guy to use, because they'll be on the field a lot more than just a guy who has a singular skill set or a rotational piece, stuff like that. So that's kind of like where I start.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel like a Marvin Mims almost got pushed into like only being a field stretcher by a lot of people. And yet I think we've kind of found out that maybe he's more than that. And I always, you know, tended to like him more than most. And unfortunately, we're not really seeing him like truly do it in the NFL just yet. But I feel like we've already kind of seen that he can do it. And he's not just strictly a field stretcher. But I don't know. Maybe you disagree.
I do, but I'm not ready to like really fully like be like, no, John, you're wrong. Like, there's no way. But that really was my pre-draft analysis. I thought it was a field stretcher. Like, it ends like a slot stretch, such a stretch slot wide receiver. And the only one I've ever seen successful at that was Marquise Brown. Is the only one I've ever seen be successful in that position.
So, I also love Hollywood, so maybe I have a type, you know?
Yeah. And then I didn't think he was that good of an athlete. He tested really well at the combine. When you watch his tape, it's like there's not a lot of separation, and he has such good ball tracking, good hands. But, like, I didn't know if that could translate to the NFL at his size. If he was, like, you know, 6'3" with those type of hands and ball tracking and speed, I would be all over. Like, yeah, this guy is a bona fide, like, deep threat no matter what. So – but no, I was not in a Marvin Mims. But I understand, though, from the analytics perspective, though, early declare, that production at Oklahoma. Like, I think that was – there's always, like, one or two guys each year that I'm disconnected with the analytical community. That was definitely mine last year.
Yeah, and unfortunately, no one's right or wrong yet. We really don't know. We've seen some flashes, but he has not been on the field. So, unfortunately, we do not know just yet. Toronto Dave – Is yeah. Oh yeah, you got to give him a little bit of time. Toronto Dave's in the chat. He says looking for the archetypes, and it definitely sounds like that's what you're doing. You know, looking for that. Has there ever been anyone that like truly surprised you that like you were like, nope, this guy's just this, and then they ended up being so much more than that in the NFL?
You know,
that you can think of
early on, I was wrong. So I had a little rule in my head to like not do too much, like not to care too much about the early stuff. We were kind of talking about a pre-show. My like second year doing in-depth analysis, like Chris Olave, for example, Chris Olave, like his last year at Ohio State, his last 2 years, he was used as a stretch wide receiver. They had JSN, they had Garrett Wilson operating in the middle and the intermediate, but he was like the deep threat guy on that team. And, you know, I was like, why should I care about a field stretch in the NFL? I didn't really care about him, but I knew freshman, sophomore year, well, really sophomore year, well, he was used as a possession wide receiver. Like that's his role. And I wrote him off as just being a field stretcher when he already exhibited he can do both. And so I thought that was more like, I should have took that as he can do both. The coaches just said JSN and Garrett Wilson are better possession receivers. And they just kind of moved him to a spot because they definitely couldn't do field stretching work, but he could. So I went from being multidimensional to like, well, he's just singular. And that was somewhere I messed up like that. So.
No, I could definitely see that. I mean, obviously a lot of people got Olave wrong. I mean, I always liked Olave. I remember we did a mock when Duchesne's was still on the pod, and it was me, Aaron, and Duchesne's, and we did a 3-person mock. And I want to say it was right around like 201 or 202 or something like that. I was like, how the hell is Chris Olave still on the board? Like, how is he still available? And I took him and they both kind of looked at me like, you're crazy. You know, like he's a senior and he's this and that. And I'm like, really? I don't know. It was really weird. So I feel like a lot of people got Olave wrong. I didn't get a lot of Olave, but that was because I loved Garrett Wilson. I ended up trading up to get G Will quite a bit. Or there was a couple times I got G Will like 107 in the league. You know, like how the hell does that even happen? So I ended up with a lot more G Will, but I still love me some Olave for sure. But obviously that, you know, we know with campus2canton.com where you're from. They have the year 1-0 theory. You guys are big proponents of that theory, and it, you know, definitely seems to make a lot of sense. You know, if you can't get on the field, if you can't do anything in year one, you know, your chances or odds of hitting later on just seem to, you know, completely fall apart. So how much of a believer are you in the year 1-0 theory? And then are there any times where you're like willing to give an exception, maybe at an Ohio State or somebody like that, you know, something like that?
Yeah, that's a tough question. So I'm a huge believer in year 1-0 theory. You know, if it's not broken, it doesn't need to be fixed. But the numbers John was alluding to, it's more of a metric to use to identify duds more than it's studs. So guy, it only applies to top 300 recruits. That's about your top 50 wide receivers in each class. So like your 3-stars don't count. Like Chris Olave doesn't count. Justin Jefferson doesn't count. Michael Thomas doesn't count. Stuff like that. But only three, well, two, I know two have like beaten it that have been like absolute zeros their freshman year and then made it in the NFL. That's Jarvis Landry, who was definitely stuck behind some high level talent. And then there was DK Metcalf, who was hurt his entire freshman year. And then even as a scout, I probably would have said he was one-dimensional, but maybe elite at his one-dimensional role. You're allowed to do that. George Pickens, very elite at his one thing that he does. You know, like, that's okay. And then with the non-zeros, though, that's it. It's just those two guys. Nico Collins, though, who was a zero as a freshman, he's on his way to beating that. So could be three here pretty soon. But basically, it's non-zeros have an 18% chance of having a top 36 fantasy season. And then year 1-0s have there's 3% chance that they become a top 36. You go down to the top 12, it's only been the two. It's been Jarvis Landry and DK. And then for non-zeros, it's 8%. So again, not really measures used for hits, but you can definitely eliminate like the duds right away. So, and that helps move guys for values and trades. I tried to dump off some Inesanya a little bit earlier today, you know, but it helps get some guys off your rosters.
But I mean, honestly, they don't have to hit much. And Brandon Ennis is a good example. Like, he's already kind of like halfway there. Yeah. So I mean, he could easily hit those thresholds because it's only like, what, like 100 yards receiving, like some special team stuff. There's different ways of hitting it. You know, like it doesn't, there's not like one right way. You know, you could get it rushing, you could get it receiving, you can get it on special teams. Like there's different ways of not being a year one zero.
It's eight metrics for everyone listening. It's 10 receptions, 100 yards, 5 rushing attempts, 15 rushing yards, 1 rushing touchdown. Rushing touchdown, receiving touchdowns do not count. 10 touches total, like 10 scrimmage touches, and then 115 scrimmage yards. So a combination of the two there. And then 5 kick/punt returns. And there's only been, I want to say, 4. I'm going to say like the last 10 years that hit all 8. Austin's going to kill me if I get it wrong. But the guys that have hit all 8 as true freshmen have all been like, I mean, they've been pretty good for draft buzz wise. So, the last one was Luther Burden. He hit all 8 his true freshman year. Before that was Wandale Robinson. And then before that was Rondell Robinson. And then before that
Rondell Moore.
Thank you. Rondell Moore. And then before that was Stephon Diggs. So those were like the last 4. Yeah.
Nice. And we will definitely have to talk about Luther Burden here in a little bit because, you know, as much as I love the guys getting 7.3 yards per attempt, you know, that's not exactly what I fall in love with.
It's a mix of users that you should be caring about. It's a multifaceted skill set, just like I said, for these traits things. He's a gadget/flanker, and he can be used as a deep threat. I think his route running is not special, but good enough, you know, so I would label him. I would actually label him for probably across the board.
Laviska Shenault.
Stretcher. No, don't let Lewis get in your head with that stuff. That stuff was so lame on him to do that. It's not even remotely close.
I don't know. I mean, I'm truly not comping the players because I don't even really care about Lavisca or like, I mean, I have them in a database somewhere, but I'm not truly comping them, but I'm just saying like, that is kind of how they're using him and it's working, but you know, people are starting to get, crazy, like, oh, he's the wide receiver one. And
I think he's closer to Curtis Samuel. So if that helps you out.
I don't really think that Curtis Samuel's an amazing wide receiver either.
He's been hurt a lot. He's been with terrible teams, but he was a great prospect coming out.
He was. He was also also overrated, so that worked out great. But speaking of overrated, why don't we dive into the wide receiver tiers here? But we'll start with the lower level guys, the tier 3, tier 4 kind of guys, and then we'll work our way up to the top tier. And this is, like I said, this is going to be tough because I feel like we're going to, especially with these lower tiers, we're going to have some differing opinions here. And that's perfectly fine. That's why I brought you on. So that it wouldn't just be me going, well, I have this guy here and I have that guy there and that kind of thing. So I'm going to name some names. You see if you agree that they should be in like a lower tier. And when I say lower tier, I'm thinking more of like day 3 guys here, like, you know, that kind of thing.
Are we doing more like draft grades or like tiers? Like, how far down do your tiers go? That's what I'm trying to ask. Like, you do like tier 8?
Not too low. Like, I'm not trying to look for like undrafted free agents here or anything like that. Like, I'm thinking like guys that you think that, you know, could be you know, day 3, you know, something like that. That's where we'll start. And then, I don't know. Normally I start from the top and work my way down, but I decided to switch it up this time because I didn't want to start with Marvin Harrison Jr. for whatever reason. So, all right. So there's some names like Johnny Wilson. I think you guys even touched on him today on Back to Debbie. Johnny Wilson, like a Ricky Pearsall, even an Antoine Wells Jr., if he comes out, he's been hurt. Like, I was way higher on him going into the season. Obviously, things have not worked out, but maybe he gets back on the field and can actually do something from there. Brian Thomas Jr., players like that. So, you know, what do you think of those 4 players? Do you think that they should all be roughly in the same tier, or do you have them in, like, you know, wildly different tiers there?
I think they're in wildly different tiers. Out of that group, okay. I think the day 2 guy is Brian Thomas. And I'm not, like, super excited about his skill set. Like I said, with architecture types, I think he's more of a field stretcher role. I love that the different usage he got, like, last 2 years, they've been trying to use him as a possession receiver. It's been pretty bad. They let him go outside more, like a field stretching type of ability, which I think has been fine for him. Like, his stuff at the line's kind of weird too. Like, his release is not like, the footwork's not there. He somehow just goes around people, but he has like really nice reach with his legs and stuff like that. He get it done. And once Jaden Daniels, I know you're a big fan of him. He knows how to extend a play. So if he gets Brian Thompson a ton to get downfield, like it's pretty good. So I've heard like Austin Samuel compliment to Martavius Bryant. I think he might be closer to like a Dyami Brown, but I think he's like a third rounder for me. That's the like, grade I have for him. Johnny Wilson, though, like just an enigma. Like I don't even know what to put him as. I think they're trying to use him like a possession guy. I don't think he has good hands. Let's the ball get into his body too much. Doesn't really attack it. 6'4". Like you need to attack it with your long arms. And then, yeah. And like people have been quiet about him lately. I don't know if you noticed that. And it's kind of weird because he's had 3 out of his 5 games over 90 yards. And it's like, I don't even like Johnny Wilson, but the Johnny Wilson crowd has not been like going off about him. I don't really.
Well, I think Keon Coleman coming over and blowing up in week one kind of ruined everything because even like Johnny Wilson had a decent game in week one, but it was like, you know, like you said, like 90 yards or whatever. And then Keon Coleman, you know, scores 3 touchdowns, looks unstoppable. And we'll get into Keon here in a little bit, but he's kind of fallen off since then, you know, it's like not looking as unstoppable, whereas Wilson's been kind of consistently just there. And I like Johnny Wilson. I feel like, you know, you had kind of said, I think on your pod that he doesn't really fit too many molds. And so it's kind of tough to like say who he is as an actual player, but I feel like he is a guy that's going to be drafted and like that we should have on our radars, you know?
I think he's a day three guy. I don't remember who did this comp. I might have been our intern, Javon, JJ Parker, who said that he's Colin Johnson. I don't know who to give credit to for that. But Colin Johnson, he went to the Jags. I think he was a 5th rounder. Thought that was pretty good comp for him. I kind of like that. But, yeah, I don't.
And he actually got some buzz, too. Colin Johnson got some buzz for a little bit.
He had, like, one game, like, 150 yards. It was super random.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had, like, one random big game. But he was, not a big name. But, I mean, there was people, dynasty players knew who the hell Colin Johnson was. And I could see Johnny Wilson doing the same thing.
And then Ricky Pearsall, I do like. I did talk about him 2 weeks ago. Corey cut it out, though. But I liked Ricky Pearsall. I think is a really good slot wide receiver. I don't think he's going to get the draft buzz, but like goes to the Senior Bowl and all of a sudden I think that's probably where like, he'll get his hype there. And I do think he does have like day two upside, like 3rd rounder, but I think he's going to be a really solid slot in the NFL. Like I think we'll see him on Sundays. I'm not sure if we'll put him in our fantasy lines, but I'm pretty positive we'll see him on Sundays.
But I tend to agree. And I do actually have Brian Thomas kind of like in a tier of his own compared to those guys. So I agree with you that like he is the best of that grouping. I just don't know that I think that he's anything special either. So that's why I grouped him here. But like you said, like as far if I don't really project draft capital and all that kind of stuff, it just kind of works out to where normally the better guys in the model get better draft capital, but it doesn't always work out that way. And I mean, just like, you know, like Michael Wilson getting 2nd round draft capital this year and Jonathan Mingo, like no one expected that shit. So, like, you know, we can be okay at it.
I expected Mingo because I got to go to the Senior Bowl. We did live shows, me and Barnabas did. Day one, I said Puka Nacua was the best player out there. And then after that, I was like, Mingo has really good feet for a guy his size. Don't understand why I couldn't put it together. His film was so confusing me because, like, his film was just not good. It wasn't great. It wasn't good. And then, like, on the Senior Bowl, like, he looked pretty clean. And I was like, he earned himself some money. He's going to go in the 3rd round at least. I did not think he was going to go where he was. But I was like, I feel like we're the only ones hyping him up. And then slight little rant, John, here. I'm at the Senior Bowl. I don't like these quote unquote NFL scouts that are there. Like, they don't know what they're doing. I'm there. It's day three. It's day three. And like, I'm over here in conversation next to me. And one guy's like, yo, who's that over there? And the guy's like, that's whips out his little note card. And I'm like, how do you not know these names yet? And he whips out his little note card. And he's like, that's Jonathan Mingo. And he's like, oh, and he's like, yeah, I think he's 6'4", 200. And I'm like, hey, we've been here. We have the official measurements. They came out like 4 days ago, buddy. It's 6 foot, right. Like 220. Like you shouldn't. it's just like got me frustrated. I'm like, I really don't think like
that's sad.
A lot of these guys, like maybe like there's some trusted guys, but some of them, like I'm like these guys don't do their homework. But anyway, I thought maybe up there.
All right, what other like day three guys do you think that we could throw into the mix here?
Well, I think I missed a name though. You mentioned Brian Thomas, Ricky Pearsall, Johnny Wilson. I thought there was a fourth. Was there not?
Pearsall, Wilson. Oh, Antoine Wells.
Oh, Wells. Yeah. So I wasn't big on Wells coming in. Wells, to me, on tape, I thought was a position wide receiver. Like, that was his archetype for me. I didn't think any of his route running was anything special. Like, I don't think his footwork was special. But I thought he had very good hands, strong at the catch point. And then as far as a yak threat goes, like, he's not soft, which I really do actually appreciate. So that combined with being an older prospect, makes me feel like, you know, third round's his cap, probably more of an early day two guy, and that's where I had him at. But if he doesn't have a production profile, I don't know how you feel about this, but if he doesn't have a production profile, he has to go back, and that'll be 6 years removed from high school if he goes back. So,
yeah, that'll be rough. I mean, I love what he did last year, and that's why I got hyped about him, because he really did blow out. He didn't have that early on production, but he did blow up in a big way this past season. And then this year just has not worked out. Xavier Leggett's kind of taking his spot, although he's another late breakout and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really tough situation. We really need to see him get back on the field, or at some point we're going to have to say, okay, he's just not going to come out this year. I don't think. But for now, I kind of still have him in this range. Like, we still have time. I mean, it's what, week eight? Like, he still have a little bit of time for him to get back on the field, put up two or three big games, and then the NFL is like, all right, yeah, that's the guy that we saw last year. He did it again. Let's get him in the NFL, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Leggett, though, I do think he's a day three guy. I'm not in with the hype on him. I just, like, similar to Antoine Wells, honestly, like, I think he's like he's a discount Treylon Burks. That's what he is, but much older. And I don't think he would have never touched the field the way he is now without Wells getting hurt, which also I don't like that either. And Spencer Rattler is a quarterback too. He's just holding on to that ball and just staring him down. Like, it's like Leggett gets open or he doesn't, and they take a sack. It's kind of weird. It's like they're either going for a 20-yard gain with this throw, or they're losing five from a sack. I think it's kind of ironic how they're using him.
Yeah, and then we have some other seniors from the Pac-12 that I think people kind of either were or are still hyped on, and I don't really love them, and I think that they're going to be day three guys. It's Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, getting a lot of hype. Taj Washington starting to get some hype from USC. Like, a lot of these guys, Xavier Leggett is another one. I'm trying to think if there's any other
Elijah, like, Badger.
Elijah Badger, okay. That's another one right in that same range. Monterey Baldwin, kind of another one there.
Jeremiah Hunter.
I have Jeremiah Hunter higher. J. Michael Sturdivant. I have him here in this range. I have Hunter higher still.
Are you Jacob Cowan guy?
I am. I am. And Aaron does not like him. He's just gave up on him. And yet I'm still holding out hope. So I'm just trying to think of anyone else that, like, has to be mentioned here on day three. Honestly, this might sound like blasphemy with the way that he started off the season, but I think Brendan Rice is a day three guy as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, wait, blasphemy in what way? Like, too high or too low?
No. I feel like people are going to, like, say, like, look what Brendan Rice has done at USC in the first six games this year, blah, blah, blah. He has to be a day two guy. And I really feel like he's like a fifth round pick waiting to happen.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I'm a Brendan Rice fan, but only because I had, like, the Dorian Singer stuff is just ludicrous to me. We'll probably talk about it pretty soon. But anyway, I agree with you.
Yeah. We got to get up into, much higher tiers here before we can get into Singer. So,
With Cowing, though, like, last year, like, I liked Cowing. He went from P5 to G5. You look at his raw numbers, you're like, this guy definitely put it together. But his, like, best games were San Diego State, that's a terrible defense. Cal, that's a terrible defense. Colorado, that's a terrible defense. And then UCLA, their defense is okay. But, like, for the most part, like, he's not, like, putting up big numbers. And I don't understand, because last year, I had him as a late day two grade. And they didn't go. And there's a draft advisory board. He must have gotten word that they don't want him. Like, so I'm like trying to read the tea leaves and be like, this guy's been in the league 6 years, and I think he's been very productive for three of those years. Like, they have a pretty good – the NFL should probably have a pretty good idea of who this guy is and what he can do. And they're saying no thank you to a sixth year, so I'm a little bit out on Jacob Cowling. But I was a fan last year. I really was.
Yeah, and obviously, becoming a fifth-year player, not coming out, that always hurts. I don't have him high in my ranks anymore. Okay. But I have him higher than all the guys that we've mentioned here, just because I feel like he has shown something at some point, even though it's taken longer than we would have liked for him to actually, like, come out and get into the NFL. But then again, like, every game that goes by, if he's not really killing it this year, he's just dropping a little bit and a little bit and a little bit. So, I mean, by the end of the season, he might be in that same tier with these guys, or maybe those guys will move up a little bit ahead of him, just as is right now. I still feel like he kind of did really big things, even though it was at a lower level competition wise.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about these other Pac-12 guys who listed off. I'll start off with Elijah Badger, who I do think I have to check. I'm writing my article right now. I think I put him at wide receiver 10. So I do think he's a day two guy. Last year, I was a pretty big Puka Nacua fan because Puka Nacua was the only one in that class that had a gadgety skill set. Thought he was a good athlete. And then his footwork actually really surprised me that one day at the Senior Bowl. Really want to see him there for all 3 days. Only got to see him for the one day. But and he also had Jaren Hall there, which really kind of helps having that connection, obviously. But anyway, Elijah Badger, I think, has the best gadgety skill set coming out in this class. There's a lot more in this class. Jalil Farouk, Malachi Corley from WKU. There's also Jared Brown with Coastal Carolina. No one talks about him, but G5 guy with a yak skill set. Anyway, this class has a lot of fun yak guys, but I think Elijah Badger is one of the better short area guys. Now, he's in the middle of a new offense, new coach. They brought in Jaden Rashada, who's a true freshman. He was good 1 week and then mediocre the next two. They're just going through QBs. It's like on their third string QB now with Trenton Bourget. So and he was also hurt to start off the season too. So a little bit slow start this year. And his profile has a lot more context into it. I didn't realize this till actually last week. I got a little school class from some of the guys. As a true freshman, he couldn't get on the field because he couldn't enroll in college. Something about credit like transfers and stuff like that from high school to college. Couldn't get on the field there. And that was actually the COVID year of 2020. And then 21 was like, quote unquote, his actually first year on the football team. I think he was like 7 for like something. I don't know if he would have hit the year 1-0 thresholds. And then he got his actual full time on the field the year after that. So there's a little bit of like background stuff that he couldn't control his true freshman year. So gets like a free pass on them being a year 1-0 there. But along with everybody else that was Pac-12. So I like Elijah Badger. I think he's a Senior Bowl invitee. I think he's a third rounder. I don't think second round's in his cards, but I think he's a third rounder.
Yeah, I have Badger there, like I said, in that same realm with Taj Washington and Xavier Leggett, Jalen Polk, like all those kind of guys. So I mean I'm not seeing it. I'm a big yards per reception kind of guy. Like I feel like that's my way of figuring out if they have athleticism or not. It doesn't always work out. It's not a perfect thing, but when you see the 12.8 yards per reception for his career, 12.3 for his career, 12.8 this year, 12.4 last year, 8.7 the year before, it just makes me think that he's not like an overly athletic wide receiver. And it's a very simple metric, and it's a very simple thing to look at. But like I said, most of the time, it does kind of translate to like how athletic is this guy, because you're just not going to see some guy that runs a 4.3 getting 12 yards per reception. It just doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely only a short area guy. You won't see him work downfield. Not at the next level. That's for sure. And then, another guy you said that I was a fan of, Jalen McMillan. I think Jalen McMillan is actually underrated. So we're going to disagree on this one here for sure. I think he's a pretty good possession wide receiver. He's just like very good. Well, all around, there's just no real trump card to his game. Like he's a good route runner. I was about to say he's got good hands. I think he's really not good at adjusting to badly thrown balls. But outside of that, good hands, fine yak player. He's not super soft either. I think he's a fine possession receiver next level. Another guy that's like third rounder, I don't think he's special. Like, so he won't be going the second round. But, early day three was probably like his floor. Same with Badger for me.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I just, once again, I don't think that he's overly special in the Pac-12 doing what they've done on offense.
I hate the Pac-12 defenses. They're just so bad. And I'm like supposed to watch these games and like be like, yeah, this guy's a stud. And I'm like sitting here like, I don't know. Like, can they do this in the SEC? Like, that's what I'm like. That's my issue too. Like, everyone's like hounding me about like, I've been like notoriously low on Roma Dunze because like he's playing zone. Yeah. He's killing zone coverage, which is great. He's definitely a far better athlete than anyone else on the field. And it's like, but is he a better athlete on an NFL level? Like, probably not. Like, I'm with you. I hate watching Pac-12. A little bit excited that they're dissolving for that one fact. I can see them actually play against draft eligible, like real actual NFL corners that might be going to the draft. Yep. So, I hate Pac-12 defenses. They're terrible.
I agree. And I get in trouble with a lot of people because they're like, oh, I can't believe you don't like, Michael Penix Jr. And I'm like, have you seen who he's throwing against? You know, it's just like, yeah. I,
he's kept clean so well too. He's like, there's no pressure. Yeah. He just sits there.
No pressure, no defense, no defenders. Just throw the ball and somebody will catch, and that's all that matters. But what's funny is you had mentioned Jared Brown from Coastal Carolina. I actually do have him ranked right behind Jalen Polk. So, I wouldn't say that I love him by any means, but, I do have a little bit of love for him. I think that he could be drafted when it's all said and done, possibly.
I think on a G5 level, I would put him in the interesting category. You know, I'm not really here hyping up G5 guys, but I would – you know, I would like to mention his name once in a while and just put him out there. Talking about Jalen Polk, though, sticking with Washington, I'm surprised you're not a fan of him because I think he's the next Dorian Singer. I think he's just a contested catch, smaller guy, can separate, but he has like phenomenal hands, phenomenal ball catch, like ball tracking. But like he's not separating. Like there's no way he's going to get around people at all. So.
See, that's the problem is Dorian Singer can separate. No. You guys just haven't seen it. So, you know, it's just that's the difference. That's why I haven't fallen in love with Polk here. You know, the guy that has 694 yards receiving as his best season.
And then just like Singer, too, like there's some quarterbacks like they don't mind like trying to throw like the tight wind, like the, you know, the F it. He'll catch it. Someone's down there somewhere, you know, like Penix is. I think he's a pretty good anticipatory thrower, but on top of that too, he's not afraid of throwing the contested ball, which I do think is one of the bigger separators of NFL quarterbacks, like from college, if they're willing to do that or not. But anyway, so he throws those 50-50 balls. And like, if it's just Polk out there without whatever, anyway, Polk doesn't have an NFL skill set. I think he's a late day three guy and a mistake.
Yeah. I tend to agree with that as well. Moving up a tier into probably like maybe early day three, possibly like, you know, late day two guys, that kind of thing, at least for me. This is where we get into, you know, guys like a Keon Coleman for me. Like he was actually higher for me at the beginning of the season after you know, had that huge, massive game. But then obviously like he's really fallen off for the most part. You know, whether you want to blame him or blame Jordan Travis or whatever. I mean, it's just like he completely disappeared for like two or three games. I think he kind of came back maybe this week or last week or something like that. Yes. So, I mean, he's moved back up. Like he was somewhere around like wide receiver 40 for me going into the season. And then after that week one, he skyrocketed. You know, he was like wide receiver 15 or whatever, something around there. And then he kind of fell off. And then, you know, the past week or two, he's kind of moved back up. So I have him here. I don't know exactly how to feel about him. Like he clearly has some things that that work in game, but it doesn't seem to work on like a consistent level.
He's like, this is my issue. And I text her. I'm a late night owl guy. I'm always up. I don't have kids. Like I'm up late, you know? And I'm texting our group. Like I did film study on Keon Coleman last night to reevaluate him for this article I'm writing. 5 contested catches on 17 contested targets. Like that's abysmal. And it's like crazy. That's about 30% for the people at home trying to do that math. Last year it was 65.5 or something like that. His catch rate at contested catches, like it was 62.5, which is phenomenal. So I don't understand what changed, and I had to go watch the film. And like, because I don't think Jordan Travis is a good thrower. Like I definitely don't. But like some of these are like he should bring some of these in. Like some of them are like, you know, 5-yard curl routes. He's sitting there like he's probably told to. The ball gets thrown and like a guy, like his body's in the right place. He's just not properly boxing the guy out. He has like soft hands. This guy's just smacking the ball and it touches his hands. I'm like, you need to bring those in. Like you need to bring, like, it's weird. Cause he's my wide receiver 6. I think he's like a tier 2 guy or like he's a tier 2 guy for me. And I liked his tape a lot more combining this year, last year. My issue last year was I didn't really see a lot of movement. It was just like a lot of straight line stuff. With Florida State, I got to see some really nice like movement against like LSU. And I was like, I didn't give enough credit for his athleticism.
Then we figured out that LSU's defense is god awful.
Free square. It's a free square out there. I still think he has good movement ability. He was just excellent the jump ball receiver. And I think he's the best physical player in this class. Like he's definitely that alpha, like X, like that should be the poster child for that in this class. But this contested catch ratio is just really messing with my head. Cause I'm like watching the tape. Like, why is he not fixing this. Like, this is easily not, like, this wasn't what I saw last year, and that's my issue, because last year said that he was good at this stuff, and this year it's saying that he's not. He's got some good hands, though. Some nice one-handed grabs. And here's the thing, too. It's my theory right now. Haven't workshopped it with the guys yet. He's great when he's in motion. Like, if he's running, actively running a route and hit in stride, I think he's really good. It's these, like, stop and come backs and sit in zone stuff that I think he's just not good at all. And that's my working theory right now.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I kind of agree with you. I think that he's just not quite there yet. He's not a consistent, like, great wide receiver. He has some flashes. Like, he definitely has some parts to his game that I like, the model likes, all that kind of stuff. You know, maybe he can put it all together by the end of the season. Like I said, he has had a couple good games in a row here. So it's not that it can't happen. It's just that it didn't happen. You know, so it's like, like I said, that week one was like, holy crap, like, he can't be stopped. Now we can say LSU's defense is god awful. Like, he still looked amazing in that week one, and then he really just kind of fell off for a little bit. And then, like I said, we're starting to see a little bit of a resurgence here. The next player I have in basically the same tier is somebody that you talked about today, and this one's really tough because I really like DeVontez Walker. The whole situation with NCAA and all that kind of stuff really screwed him over. Now we see him come back in week one. He doesn't really do too much, but in week two there, he just completely blows up, three tutties, like, all that kind of stuff. So obviously he could easily move up again. I think if you remember, you were actually the one that corrected me, because I was really high on DeVontez Walker. I had him as a junior and I was like, holy shit, like, I love this guy. And then you're like, hey, chill out. He's actually a fifth year player. And then, of course, that dropped him down a little bit, because a fifth year player is always going to be discounted a little bit. But then everything happened. It's just a really difficult player to rank at this point, but I kind of feel comfortable with them right where he is in this tier. Like I said, like, possibly day two, you know, like, late day two, early day three kind of deal. Maybe that it changes before the end of the season. But how do you feel about DeVontez there?
Pretty good, actually. I really thought he put like a clinic on for Miami. Just for everyone listening to get some context in there, Walker, his first year, he tore an ACL, so just didn't even go to college. He just took a gap year, didn't even go. And then in 2020, which was the COVID year, he played in the FCS, and the FCS just canceled every single league, like, across the board. So he couldn't get on the field then. And then he transferred to Kent State. And then that's where the story begins from. So 5 years removed from high school, first year on the actual field, Kent State. I feel pretty good about him. We knew he had, like, high end NFL speed. Like, that's his thing. And then seeing him against, like, Miami, Florida, like, I watched that tape pretty in depth, because I like Miami secondary. I think their safety is my number one safety in class. Cam Kitchens is number one safety for me. I think he's a second rounder. I think he's a high second rounder, but they have other guys too. I think it are like, they're going to be NFL guys, like, three or four guys in that backfield. So I do think that's a good secondary, and his routes weren't complicated. But, like, strong hands, good yak ability, even had, like, two rushing attempts for 19 yards, which was really, I didn't really think they're going to use him like that. So clearly they're a guy that want to get him the ball in space. I think he's like, if I have to give a comp, I think he's like Jameson Williams, but without the good footwork. Like, he can't stop the way that Jameson Williams stops, or like turn the way he turns. But like, I think he has a spot in the NFL. I have him currently as a second round grade right now. But I feel really good about him being a day two guy at the least.
Yeah, I like it. Like I said, it's tough, but hopefully he puts together some big games here for him and for Drake May, yeah, purposes. You know, maybe we can actually see that happen and maybe feel a little more comfortable really solidifying him there into day two. Now, these next two players, we already touched on Jacob Coeing. That's where I have him, kind of in the same tier as those guys. But like I said, he's not doing that much. So every game he kind of falls a little bit. He could easily be below those guys when it's all said and done. This is the one where it's just all going off of last year, and it's Dorian Singer. It's literally what he did last year. He's done hardly anything, but you look at the offense, and it's just not a real offense. I honestly think that Cliff Kingsbury is ruining Caleb Williams, and not actually ruining, because he's going to be just fine. but like he's not helping him grow as a player at all, because the offense is literally what it was, you know, for the Cardinals. It was, you know, what it was for what Texas Tech before that. It's just spread the ball around, like throw the ball deep, you know, like 40 yards to the wide open guy. That's not helping anyone or anything like that. And so Dorian Singer has been kind of phased out of the offense. But when you look at what he did last year at Arizona, it's just, it's a night and day difference. Like it's a quality player. Now, if he does absolutely nothing this year, then he's probably just not going to come out. And at some point, you know, the rank's going to have to change and everything. But as of right now, I'm still banking on what he did last season. I know you obviously hate that because you hate Dorian Singer. Yeah. But can you tell me anything about Dorian Singer that can make me believe in this ranking?
Oh, no, absolutely not. But I do think he's got like good hands. I've always have. I just don't like care for his movement ability. It's just, it's not even close to an NFL movement ability. I really just think he's Tylan Wallace all over again. But it looks like he wouldn't have Tylan Wallace's production profile, so he wouldn't even have that to go off of. But
it's getting rough.
And like maybe you could look forward to next year, but I think everyone can agree that the next year it's going to be Branch and Deuce Robinson's show. Like, right? It's got to be. Like, they're going to, I don't think Singer has a shot to really elevate himself in this offense anymore. I think it's done.
Well, it's so weird because he runs all the routes, and honestly, like, yeah, I don't watch enough film to say that if he's getting open or not. I don't know. I truly don't know. All I know is that he was a quality wide receiver last season and he's still running all the routes. So like they trust him to be on the field, but they're not looking for like the 12-yard pass, you know. They literally either dump it off to the running back or the tight end for like, you know, 2 yards and then hope that it turns into something, or they go like 40 yards down the field to Taj Washington. I mean, Taj Washington is the leading receiver for USC. Do you think that Taj Washington is the best wide receiver on that team? Like, I don't think anyone agrees that's the case.
Veterans, I think he's the best one. I don't think he's the most talented out of everyone there. But, oh, actually, no, I take that back. I actually do think Ben Rice has a better profile than Taj. But I don't know. He's better than Singer. Look, these scrambling quarterbacks like to extend the play long enough to actually see a guy open. That's most of college guys. I think Caleb Williams is a little bit better than that. He can actually throw some anticipatory throws. But Taj Washington has speed that can get open. I mean, he's 5'10", 175. Like, he can get open. I don't think Dorian Singer, like I said, I don't think he can get open. He's not a good athlete. I don't think he can shake a DB no matter what, even given extended time. I just don't. And I think Caleb would rather throw it to guys open than guys that are not open.
I definitely agree with that. And I mean, obviously, it's getting more and more difficult to be a Dorian Singer truther at this point. But I'm still holding on to hope that it's just, yeah, I think it'd be completely different if he was just completely phased out of the offense. But the fact that he's not gives me some hope, and I feel like that offense hasn't truly like found itself yet. You know, as stupid as that is, 7 weeks into the season, you know, it just feels like, especially after last week, like they don't have an actual offense yet. It was literally just throw it to the open guy. You know, because we aren't actually playing any defenses, and then they went and played Notre Dame and they're like, oh shit, that doesn't work.
Yeah. And I was thinking about a scenario for Dorian Singer here. So here's how it works out. Malachi Nelson comes up next, right? He doesn't have any best friends. We don't know who his favorite target is. Maybe that could be Dorian Singer. We got to look out for that roommate effect in the offseason. If you hear the whole, like, their roommates.
Oh, yeah. Breakfast and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. Couple days with their girlfriend. They're hanging out with Taylor Swift. I don't know. We got to.
Andy, my co-host from the Full Tilt Devi Pod, says Dorian Singer's dad. Oh man, I'm getting it from both sides over here. You hate to see it. All right. Well, speaking of that, I actually have to get over to that somewhat soon, so we can't go too crazy long here, especially talking about Dorian Singer too much longer. But all right. So, anyone else in the late day two, you know, third round kind of guys, or that we need to talk about before we get into like the really good guys here?
I have a guy that's a headache for me that's probably a really good guy for you, so this could probably be a good segue. I don't like Troy Franklin. I've had issues with him, and I keep like the hype gets to me and I keep putting him up like 5 or 10 spots, and then I'll like go back to review his film and I'm like, nah, you belong back down here in wide receiver 20, buddy.
20, wow.
20 overall.
All right, so My whole thing has always said that Troy Franklin is overrated.
Okay. Here you go. Best friends.
Besties here. However, he's moved up a lot this year because I really did think that like last year he had a lot more that he needed to prove. This year I feel like he's kind of doing it, although it's once again it's in the Pac-12, no defenses, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you know, I look for domination, I look for, you know, the market share and all that kind of stuff, and I mean he has all of that kind of stuff, even though it's in an offense that is putting up a lot of points for everyone. He is, you know, by far and away the best player on that team. So, I mean, he's skyrocketed up my ranks. I still don't have him in the top tier though. And I feel like most people do at this point.
Yeah, I do too. So this is like the one guy I look at that I'm like, I'm ready to be wrong. Like if there's a guy I'm wrong on, it's going to be this one. There's always like one in each class. But I find Troy Franklin's a straight line guy. I don't see too many in-breaking routes, and that really annoys me. So I talked about filling them into architecture types earlier in the show. Like, I don't know. He's not, yeah, sure, he's 6'3", but he's like 185. Like, he's not an alpha. He's not a physical guy. He won't win those games in the NFL. As far as footwork goes, the only deception I really see in his routes are slow goes. So he'll like, you know, he'll go half speed, get a guy in close to his body, and then he'll explode out. And that's fine deception, but usually that type of stuff is longer developing routes. It's not like right away, quick release, like quick slants, the way the NFL kind of is nowadays. So when I look at him, I'm like, what archetype does he fill in? He's not a possession guy. I settled on him being a field stretcher, which is like the worst architecture type for me for fantasy. And so that's my issue with Troy Franklin. And I don't think I'm making the mistake I did with Chris Olave, where I'm ignoring that he's actually has a possession skill set. I haven't seen him do that. So that's my word, Troy Franklin. I think he's a straight line guy. And I've settled on like for comps. Did you ever watch Terrence Williams, like Cowboys wide receiver? I think that's his ceiling. I think that's his ceiling. And I think Terrence Williams was, you know, not a bad fantasy football player, you know? So I think that's a fine comp too. I don't think people can be too mad about that, but I think Troy Franklin's a late second rounder, maybe early third.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that might be the disconnect for people, because I feel like most people are going to talk about him as like a late first rounder, early second rounder, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I do. And like, I'm looking at his PFF, like his contested target rate is 2 for 6. For a guy his size, just like Marvin Mims we talked about earlier too, I think that he's got really good hands and good ball tracking given his size. So he's good in contested situations for college. I just don't know if that translates to NFL. And then, of course, we talked about how we hate Pac-12 defenses because they're just they're terrible. And I will say this. I do think Oregon has the best offensive line in the Pac-12, usually year after year. Maybe Washington's giving a run for money. But for the most part, they're usually so dominant in the trenches. Bo Nix has the longest time to throw the ball. And Bo Nix is not afraid to just chuck it either. Like, he's not – I don't think Bo Nix is a good quarterback, but he certainly 100% trusts Troy Franklin. He would throw babies out of a burning building to Troy Franklin.
So another player that I have and might even fit the same kind of mold that you're talking about, and I have in the same tier here, is Xavier Worthy. How would you compare the two, and how do you feel about Worthy compared to Franklin?
I've seen Worthy work inside, though, and that's why I think he's more of a possession guy, too. Like, I think he's got multiple skill sets. I think we talked about him much earlier, but I'm in on him. I actually moved him up to wide receiver 2 for me in the class just because he's very versatile. I think he's a chess piece. I know you're not a Quinn fan, so we can at least say this. Like, Quinn's lollipopping this ball. Like, this ball's floating for too long. Like, I think Worthy would be popping off with a better QB. Because that can actually get in the ball in some certain areas. But the one thing that I always hated Worthy about his game was his hands. I still do. PFF certainly lies about his drops, like 100%. Like, I think he had 4 against Oklahoma last year and like 4 against TCU. And I go check PFF and they like credit him like 3. And I'm like, if it touches his hands, it's a drop. Like, you got to count that. It's a drop. Sorry. So
right.
Anyway, I think he has bad hands. And I think that's permanently a part of his profile. But like, if that's my only complaint, then like, I mean, you know, what's the worst case? Like Deontay Johnson. So I think Worthy's pretty good. I think he's pretty good. I settled on that.
No, I agree. And like I said, I kind of have them in the same tier. They're definitely not in the top tier. I used to have Worthy in the top tier, but you know, but combining the drops, Quinn Ewers, you know, other wide receivers and everything. It just hasn't, Worthy hasn't quite lived up to the hype from, you know, from year one there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Cause Casey Thompson, dude, that guy would just chuck it. He wouldn't care. He would just sling it. And those have, you kind of like those, you appreciate those guys for wide receiver evals because you get to see a little bit of everything from those guys.
Yeah. Now there's some other players that we kind of skipped over, but like I said, we're running a little low on time, so it's probably okay. I don't think we truly need to talk about
like a lightning round, just one sentence, one liner.
Yeah, we could. I mean, honestly, you touched on Roma Odunze earlier. That's one of the players that we kind of skipped over. Okay. I like Odunze. I just don't love him. But I feel like people love him and think that he's this absolute stud.
I've been leaning towards love lately. My biggest complaint has always been his physicality. I don't think it's there for a guy his size, but like, you know, just if you take out the for his size part, I think he's like average, which is fine. It's not a bad thing. And I think that's the only thing I hate about him. I do think though, for a guy his size, probably the best footwork in the class. I think he's Michael Pittman, like Pittman-ish, you know, like a little bit less physical, but I think he's got like that type of movement ability. So I do like him. And I don't know how he does against zone, like man coverage, which I don't think probably matters so much for a guy his size.
True. Now, this is a player that's probably not going to get the draft capital that I would like for him to get. And so he's probably way too high for me, but I think that you're a fan as well. And it's Jeremiah Hunter. I think when you're looking at, you know, the market share and all that kind of stuff, like he has all that stuff. He has the talent. He has been in some pretty shitty situations as far as quarterback coaching, you know, offense in general, all that kind of stuff. But like, he still kind of just shows out week to week. And so it's really difficult to like love him, but yet I kind of love him.
He's been atrocious the last 2 weeks, but if you ignore the last 2 weeks, he's been good. I don't know if you saw, he was 0-for-4 against Utah this past weekend.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, they also had that, what the hell's his name? I can't think of the quarterback's name right now. But, is like, dude, Finley like, still? Literally, what's up?
Is it Finley still? Is it?
Yeah, Finley. Yeah. Okay. Was it Ben Finley or whatever the hell his name is? But yeah, he's absolutely garbage. I have no idea why he's even out there. Like, and it's not even to my Sam Jackson love. Like, he's literally a terrible quarterback.
I think Jeremiah Hunter is a Senior Bowl invitee. I do struggle with his eval because just how bad the team is around him. I am a fan. I think archetype type, he's a possession guy for me. But I think he can work outside as well as like a jump ball guy, which is intriguing to me. But production profile is not there. That's more of a numbers guy for you guys to tell me if it's there or not. But I think it's all going to come down to the Senior Bowl. There's always like one or two guys that surprise the Senior Bowl. And I think he's like on that list of like, you know, could be the next Michael Wilson type of thing.
That's what I like to hear. Like I said, I don't know if the actual draft capital is going to be there, but you know, hopefully he can show out at the Senior Bowl or wherever the combine and get to that day two. And then, I mean, unless you really want to throw in some other names, you know, it's basically Emeka Egbuka, Malik Nabers, and then Marvin Harrison Jr. Is there anyone else that you really feel like should be in around that tier?
They're all first round grades for me. Along with Worthy, like those are the four. Well, actually, I gave Nabers a top 50. My issue with Nabers, I don't know what he does like exceptionally well. Like, I don't think he has anything to hang his hat on, but like, I also don't find really many faults in his game at all whatsoever, which would cause me pause if it was against Pac-12 defenses, but it's against SEC. So I just kind of write it off as like, it's okay. Like, he's killing the SEC. Like, you can't ask for him to do more than what he's doing. So I think he's a possession guy, but like, not a field, like, not a field stretcher, not like a contested catch guy. You know, like, he's not multidimensional the way some of these other guys are, which is why I put him as top 50 rather than a first rounder. But I think he's an NFL starter as a possession wide receiver, which we love for fantasy, for PPR.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've kind of always felt the same way, is I don't know that he's truly, truly special, but he's just proving to be damn good, you know, and sometimes that's just all you need. Kind of like you had touched on like a Michael Pittman before. Like, I don't know that Michael Pittman's like truly special at anything.
I would say that that guy can move 6'4". Like, that guy can move. I'm so impressed with his movement ability at 6'4".
Okay. Maybe it wasn't a good example, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like he's just a really good wide receiver. And that's kind of how I feel about Pittman as well. Like, he's not, to me, like, nothing truly special about Pittman, but he's just a really quality wide receiver. And that's kind of how I feel about Nabers there. like Buka is kind of in a terrible situation where you literally have like the best wide receiver in football ahead of you, and then you also have a terrible QB. On top of everything else, and then he's also hurt. So it's not the greatest junior year for Buka. I think it's another guy like a Singer from last year where I feel like he did enough to where I don't even truly care about this year. It's just like I'm living off of your sophomore year there.
Can I ask you about G5 here? We know there's always like one or two G5 guys each class. Can you give me your favorite one? Which ones are you? I'm asking if you. Oh, you kind of said it. I was gonna say, are you Team Horton or Team Corley?
Yeah, I do not like Corley at all. I am a Torrey Horton fan. In fact, I mean, honestly, like I skipped over him, but I actually have him above Adunze.
Oh, wow. That's bold.
It's very bold. But I mean, honestly, like they might as well be tied. But that, you know, still even tied is probably still a pretty hot take.
Yeah, I like Corley more. I just think he has a really good yak skill set. I don't know if he does more than that though, like when I do like archetype, just gadget, you know, and that those guys rely on creative play calling. So Corley Lyons with my New England Patriots, where they're super bland, like he's dead, sorry, like he's not going to do anything special because we're so boring. But goes to like a I don't know, you know, like the 49ers, like they're fun, but they got Debo, they want to do that. But
yeah, I have Corley in like the 50s, wide receiver 50, and I have Horton in the teens. So
That's ludicrous.
So I'm definitely much more of a Horton guy. But like I'm kind of running out of time here because I do have to jump onto the Full Tilt Debbie pod. Hopefully everyone will follow me there, but this has been great. I'm glad that we got to talk about all these wide receivers and everything. Like I said before, I'm a little concerned about Devy wide receivers right now because like we touched on quite a few players. We, you know, we talked about some day two guys and all that kind of stuff. We did not talk about a lot of day one guys and even like early day two guys. It was kind of like a big skip there, and maybe that was my fault for not really like getting us through the tiers properly and all that kind of stuff. But I still feel like just the way I'm looking at my own rankings and stuff, that I feel like there's almost like a tier missing that we had last year or the past couple of years, and we just don't have it right now. Maybe they'll show up, maybe they won't, I don't know. But how do you feel about that?
The class is just, it's just interesting with all these big guys here. Like I said, there's no possession guys either, so I think it's actually fine, because I preseason, I struggled doing my article. I tried to do top 15. The last 4 years in a row, we've averaged 15 wide receivers drafted day one, day two. Kind of what we care about, you know. Everyone can pick their day three champion, but for the most part, we care about day one, day two. And I couldn't like pick like another four guys to put in my article last time. And now I'm writing it again, and I'm also stuck at wide receiver 10 because I'm like sitting here like, dude, what guy can be like that third rounder, that Senior Bowl like guy that like shines and stuff like that, like that. So I'm with you. This class is not like terrible. I think the top's really kind of formed up nicely, but I don't know. It's not deep. I think it's not deep.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So I really do appreciate you jumping on. It's been a lot of fun. It was cool finally podding with you. We've talked a lot in the background and on Twitter and all that kind of stuff, but we've never done a pod together. So I'm glad that you were able to fill in for Aaron while he's gallivanting around. But why don't you tell everyone before we get out of here what you do, where they can find you, all that kind of good stuff, and then we'll get you out of here.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter or on X, whatever, at @FF_DirtyMike. But my work's at campuscanton.com. Articles coming out here. I do a lot of draft content. Also, you can find me on the Back to Devy podcast with my co-host Corey P. So, and John, thanks for having me on. You know, I love DMing you guys. We're in that group chat, so love hanging out with you.
Absolutely, and I loved beating you in the C2C League of Record League. That was, dude, obviously a lot of fun.
5 weeks are killing me. I had 10 dudes on IR after week one. It's been struggling, but like, you know, at least
that's how I feel.
I have
this
a better
week.
Record than you, so let's put it in perspective.
It's true.
All right.
It's true, but I did get that dub. But I really do appreciate you jumping on. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you guys. Make sure you guys check out Mike and all the C2C boys, including Aaron now, over at campuscanton.com. Check out all their pods, all that kind of good stuff. But for now, we're going to go ahead and cash out, and I'm going to head over to the Full Tilt Debbie pod. See you guys.